And we had the booklet here. It's from California. It was by some different families that collaborated and wrote a simple illustration on the mechanics of discipline, spanking young children. And it's in Spanish and English. And I got a hold of this years ago. We handed this Children Fun or Frenzy out for 20 years in our movement. And I asked him if I could post it on my website. The article, the handout is gone. It's that little pink 3 by 8 inches tall. And but you can visit it on the website. The mechanics of spanking a child, I don't mean to belabor this, but I do not use my hand. And it's part of my tool chest. It's just part of how I raise children. I'm not afraid of it. I don't relish it. It's just a tool. And it's an important tool. If you take that tool of spanking out of your toolbox, you'll have trouble building a child. Will you probably compensate? Yes. Are there other ways to get around it? I'm not sure. You will compensate. You'll pendulum swing. I'm not sure you'll get it done. Spanking and discipline are part of God's economy. If I speed, I'm going 70 miles an hour in a 55 mile per hour zone, I get arrested, I'm going to have to pay a fine. If I hit my thumb with my hammer, it's going to hurt. There's always consequences in life. If I don't study, I get an F and I fail algebra. If I don't show up for work, I get fired. There's always consequences. That's part of the economies of God in this world. He protects us from eternal consequences by taking that payment on the cross. He does not protect us in this life from not showing up at work. I get fired, Christian or not. And that's where we're talking here this morning. We're talking about the sanctification goes on in our life and in our child's life, and we're building Christ-like attitudes and habits and disciplines in them. And so back to spanking. I don't spank with my hand. I spank with a rod. I don't fear it. I haven't spanked in 20 years. You know, so look, you're talking to a granddad. I've got 10 granddad kids. And one on the way in another few days, we've got a contest going. When this girl's going to have this baby? And the whole family's all weighed in. And then whoever wins, they get the prizes and the whole thing. My window is, I think, coming, isn't it? Or has it already gone by? It's still coming. I'm going to win. And Gracie's got a little girl coming. And this girl's going to be born, Lord willing, in Denver. And so I have 10 grandkids. My goodness, you say, what do you know about spanking? Well, this is what I dimly remember, okay? That we spanked. It wasn't a big deal. It wasn't public. It wasn't understood by our parents. It wasn't understood by our grandparents. They say they didn't understand homeschooling. They didn't understand a lot of things we did. We just tried to avoid the problem with parents. We tried to avoid the problem with grandparents. We just abandoned the quarrel before it broke out, but we were militant in what we wanted to do. Said, well, this is how we're going to have to raise these kids, honey. We're looking at each other. We had a few examples in our churches, and we sought to establish Christ-like behavior. You know what Spock said at the end of his life? I'm not talking about the Vulcan. I'm talking about the guy who wrote to children. Benjamin. And you know what he said at the end of his life. He said, it seems that all my theories are a washout. A lot of people raise kids based on his instruction. And his instruction was antithetical, opposed to the book of Proverbs. You'll have to pick your tutor. You'll have to pick your mentor as Christians. You have to say, I like Spock. Or I like Katie Couric. Or I like Oprah Winfrey. I saw this special on Dateline. It was 2 hours on children or whatever it was. Or I pick up this book. I say, God, I'm banking eternity on this. I'm going to bank my child's here and now on this. I'm going to raise Christ in them, train Christ-like habits in them, and use your manual. Even the last chapter, you know this, the last chapter in the book of Proverbs is what? Proverbs 31. What's it all about? It's about a good wife, right? But you know what? The whole thing is really not about a wife. It's about the boy. And he says, my son, this is the kind of wife you ought to marry. And so even there, it's all on parenting. It's a wonderful book on relationships between people. And I would encourage you, you're going to have to pick your example and your teacher. And I just think this book is so good. It's so good. And so we would spank until there's a change of voice. from the rage to the whimper, and we'd spank until there's a change of posture, rigidity with the body, and this anger. Some say, well, my child just fights me so much. Well, I hold them, and I spank them until they're done fighting, and I keep spanking until they're done fighting. And then I'm still not done, remember? And I sit them down and say, okay, let's finish picking up these toys. Okay, and I'll help you. I've done things. I've made things sweeter, but I see them working at it. I say, well, I don't want to pick up my toys. And I don't want to do a lot of things, you know. Well, join the human race, you know. That's why we're together, son. We're going to both grow up together. Anyway, we need to move on here a little bit on these teenagers. Where are we?
Nine.
Manages his emotions. He who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding. He who has a cool spirit is a man or a young man of understanding. They have to get over their emotions. Has good speech, not just lots of speech. Number 10, not just lots of speech, good speech. My inmost being will rejoice when your lips speak what is right. Number 11, not foolish is sensible. A wise son makes a father glad. A wise son makes a father glad. I'm looking for their heart. I want to give them my heart. I have to gain their heart. Can I say one more thing, and I'll just be real quick. All these tapes are gone here. I'm sure it's posted on your website somewhere, and I can get you more tapes. But I just want to say that this world and its voices and the way it's coming into our children and our families is much more severe and dangerous than it was when Joshua was in ninth grade going into high school, which was 14 years ago. How many years ago? No. 16 years ago, 18 years ago, I don't know how many years ago, long time ago, if you're 32 and you're 40, whatever, and you do the math. I went back to that high school before I left Colorado because I knew a couple of the teachers. One of them was Colorado Teacher of the Year. One of them was Colorado Coach of the Year. Some guys I'd known, and they were older and they're getting ready to retire. And I went into that high school and all my kids tracked through that high school, all of them in Brighton, Colorado. And they were all gone to college. They were all done. In fact, one was... Neva, let's go back. We went back to a parent-teacher Wednesday afternoon just for an hour. Walked into that big gymnasium, and there's teachers scattered around different chairs, social studies and English and math and everything. And I knew a few faces. A lot of turnover, but I knew a few faces. I walked up, how's it going, coach? And I just talked to a few individuals. And they were delighted to see Neva and I, and because we'd sent all of our kids through that school, and they'd had an impact in that school. They left some memories. And the teacher said, I said, how's it going, Tom? Tom said, Rick, it's so bad. I am so eager to get out of here. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, and he gave me my sermon illustration. He said, when your boy began here, it's a whole different thing. Now we have three cops here in the morning, at noon, at night. Three cops. It's a big 5A school. We have three policemen that are here when the kids all show up and when the kids leave. The whole thing is just degenerated in the classrooms. Degenerate academically in the hallways. It's embarrassing, and I can't change it. And I was thinking about just his window there in high school in those hours from 8 in the morning to 3 in the afternoon, and I'm thinking how our world has just expanded that involvement with our children. And I mentioned this before the break, but you better be on the alert. Maybe the hardest thing you will do is take away your cell phone and take away your Facebook and take away your texting. You say, oh, if I did that, the whatever, it would just all explode. Okay? What do you want? We did a media fast at our HSLT 3 years ago. We tried to keep doing it, I think, but we decided we'll just do a media fast. Basically, we took 7 days with all these parents and all these high schoolers from the time they got on their van and drove all the way to Colorado, those 4 or 5 days at CSU in the dorms, all the service project, all the witnessing, all the prayer, all the worship, all the teaching, and then they drove home, and they were just going to have a complete media fast. It was an amazing time. It was an amazing time for me. I was not hooked into the media like some of these parents, but I was so concerned about the parents. I said, what's it going to be like? And I remember emails from all these parents saying, are we sure about this? Rick, are you really sure about this? I said, well, I think we ought to do it. If we can't take 1 week off from every texting and email and Facebook and cell phone and movies and magazines and all. If we can't shut it down for 1 week, my goodness. My goodness. And one mom writes back, says, well, my daughter does 5,000 texts a month. And I did that. And then another mother said, well, that's nothing. I go, what? And other sons, that's even, well, we've seen a lot more than that. And we shut it all down. And when we shut it all down for 1 week, God showed up and blessed and helped in so many ways. It's not even, can I say this about the world? It's not even the degrading aspects of the world that I'm concerned about. It's the incredible volume and how loud it is. And it never stops. It's not just, and there's evil out there, all kinds of evil. I'm not naive. I remember my kids were always trying to protect me about sin. You know, they always say, but Dad, you don't want to hear what's going on in the high school. I said, well, I wasn't born yesterday. And they go, well, we want to shield you, Dad. I remember my last daughter, she's a senior in high school. And I said, Becky, my last one, I finally thought I'd do this. I said, you know what I'd like to do before you leave? I've never done this with any of my kids. I would like to carry your book bag all day long. And I'll carry your book bag. I'll carry your backpack. And I'll just follow you all day long. I'll be your big buddy. I think there was a movie once about this little guy. He had this great big support. So I followed her around all day long. And she initially, she said, oh, Dad, you don't want to come with me. I said, no, I'll be fine. And all day long, she was just turning to me and said, I know it's crazy, isn't it? I said, yeah, it's crazy. It was just totally crazy. The academics were crazy. The rule in the classrooms was crazy. The carrying on before and after in between classes, the hallways, the cafeteria times, the lunch, the whole thing was just bizarre. Just crazy. She navigated those waters, and she graduated, and she influenced people, and she gained a position, a place. She won scholarships. She did well. Remember one daughter, Mandy, she goes off to high school. She comes off the bus the first day. She turns to me, and she was young because she graduated. She's 17. She was really young going to high school. Her first words were, I'm going to be valedictorian of this class. I said, well, that's a nice attitude, Mandy. And she goes, no, Dad, I'm going to be valedictorian. I was thinking, well, it's because she's kind of looking at the measure of the land. And she was. She was. I remember when she graduated, it was a blessing to my life to watch that little girl because she said, the principal pulled me aside a few weeks before she graduated, late in the springtime, like in April and May, and said, I know you're going to graduate. I know your dad's a preacher. Mandy, I don't want you to talk about Jesus Christ, your religion at all in your graduation, in your valedictorian speech. And she was just really angry and really upset and really came home and was, I'm just going to pray the whole thing. And I'm whatever. I said, well, why don't you pray about that? And we settled, and she worked through her speech. And I remember that day we're listening to her give the speech. She'd won a scholarship to the Denver Broncos offered her a 4-year scholarship. And her question was, it was an essay, and they said, what would you do to improve Colorado high schools? And there were like 500 kids, and they gave scholarships to 4 or 5. We all got invited down to the Dove Valley headquarters, and this is back when Elway was around and Steve Atwater, a lot of guys, and we got tickets, and I was loving the whole thing. My daughter had done nothing about college, I mean, pro football, but she went ahead and did it all, and she won it. And here it is, it's her valedictorian speech, and she's standing there, and she's standing, and she's just a little girl, and she's got her mortarboard on, you know, like this, and she flips the thing, and she's talking, and she's thanking her classmates, and thanking her teachers, thanking her parents, and then she said, and last of all. And I remember turning to all the kids, because they're all back, I'm turning to Neva, said, here she goes. And she goes, last of all, if a Denver Bronco, and some of you know that I'm very grateful I was able to receive this scholarship, and it'll help me in school and everything else. But I just want to say this. If a Denver Bronco on Sunday afternoon, when he scores a touchdown, can go down on his knees and thank God, surely I can take a minute and thank my Savior for all he's done for me. Would you all bow your heads and shut your eyes, and I'm going to pray. And she prayed, and I'm listening to this whole thing. And as soon as she's done, I'm thinking we're in trouble. I wasn't sure if we're in trouble with the principal or not. But she was smart. You know, she had enough wisdom. She brought in Denver Broncos. She brought in God. You know, that kind of works. And the principal stood up and said, all right. And everybody stood up. And she had wisdom. God gave it to her. She navigated those waters. But it was bad then, and it's worse today. I would encourage you to seriously pray about homeschooling your children when they're younger. When you release them, you never... I've had dads come up to me and say, Rick, I released them to the high school. I did what you said, and they're in trouble. And I've had brothers come in because I've been talking about parenting for a while. I said, well, what do you mean you released them? I never released them, even in high school. The only time I really released them was when they went off to college. They came home into my world. I can count on one hand the number of times my kids spent an overnighter, all seven of them, with their buddies. Mike, the big wrestler, he's captain of his wrestling team, you know, the big guy on campus, several of them were voted valedictorian, several were most popular, successful seniors, all these things. They all graduated very well academically. They all earned a lot of, that was their work school to try to get into college. They did well. They weren't perfect. But they navigated those waters. I'd be very careful today on how I release them and when I release them. Even Mike was never released to his culture. He just wasn't released over. And he was very influential on his team and in the high school. But Neva can correct me. I don't know if he ever spent an overnight with anybody. He never Friday night in the basement somewhere watching a movie, and I'm not there, and four or five guys, and he's just in somebody's basement watching some movie. That just never happened. He didn't have a cell phone. My goodness, he had a rule. We had a rule with our kids; they'd stay on campus through high school. Over the noon hour, you had an open campus where they could go off to Taco Bell, McDonald's, Burger King, whatever. Or they could stay on campus. I said, you stay on campus. He's a senior. He's graduating. He's been in that high school 4 years. He's a big guy on campus. And the one day he decides to break the rule with me, Neva and I are at Taco Bell, and it's about 11:30, and he's 18. He's a big guy. And I'm sitting there talking about, and Neva and I are doing some errands. We're at a coffee shop and a few other places in Little Brighton, Colorado. And I knew it was near the high school. I said, you know, this is going to be a zoo in a few minutes. Let's just get out of here. And I'm just getting ready to finish up. And I turn, and in walks my boy. And he walks in with four or five of his guys. And they walk in. And Mike stops the guys. And he just does this. And he walks over and he sits down with me. He puts his arm around me. I said, you can take your arm off. And he goes, what are you doing here, Dad? I said, what are you doing here, son? And he goes, I can't believe this. He pounds his head on the table. You know, he goes, the one time I thought I would just kind of, you know, I'm an older guy, Dad. I mean, I can handle this. I go, I'm sure you can. And you could have asked me. The issue is not whether you can handle this or not. The issue is whether you can whether you're under authority. He said, I know that. I can't believe this. He's pounding his head on the table. I'm just laughing. I didn't laugh out loud, but I thought this is so funny. Turn to this page here real quick. Here's the prayers that we have prayed, and I've prayed over and over for my kids. I'm going to give you an eighth one real fast. That they'd be astonished by God's work in our family. We pray this often. We want to be astonished, and we have every parent should have just a host of stories of how your children have astonished you. I have files and letters and emails. Josh goes off in college. I get an email from a guy down the hall. The guy says to me, you know, I badgered Christians all through high school. They all carry around BB guns. Your son carries around a rifle and he still loves me. I hung on to that. I printed it off. That guy came to Christ. And the story is all the way back through high school. High school is where we're training them. You should have files in your head and in your heart of where they've gone beyond taking out the trash, folks, where they've done well, that we'd be astonished by God's work in our family. Number two, Monday, that our children would do better works than their parents. Better works. My kids have done so much more than I've done in leading people to Christ and discipling and baptizing and leading small groups and raising up leaders and multiplying small groups. They're coaching leaders and they're doing these things in their 20s. And I just thank God we were able to be involved when they were 10 so that they could do it when they're 24. Their kids would have Christ-like values and character. That all my descendants would be saved. I pray that all of them would be saved. I don't want just one of them not to be saved. So many stories here. that children would become excellent spouses and find good mates. First of all, that they'd be excellent. I don't worry so much about the mate. I worry about the kind of kid they are, kind of girl, the kind of guy, that they become excellent spouses. That our children, our family be free from moral impurity. Free from moral impurity. Think of Mike, Grand Junction, many years ago. He makes varsity. He's a freshman. Varsity at 171, freshman. All with juniors and seniors. He's in a heavy class. He's a good wrestler. He's a freshman. He does have an overnighter. He's on the team. He leaves my little town. He gets on the bus. He goes all the way to Grand Junction. Coaches give all the boys $5 for supper. The coaches are going to go to some meetings before the big regional tournament or some kind of tournament here in Grand Junction. That's a long ways from home. I hear about this later from the upperclassmen. This is the story. They're walking back from the restaurant. Here they got the freshman. They're going to haze the freshman, carry on with the freshman. He's a big kid. They love him, but they're also hard on him. He's part of the team. They're going by a shop and go. They pool their change. They give him $5. They say, "Whitney, go in there and buy a Playboy or a penthouse or something." Mike looks at the money, looks at the deal. He dropped it and started running. At which point, all the upperclassmen are telling me this story. They go, "We were kind of frightened because we knew if we lose the freshman, coach will kill us." And they yell after Whitney. He said, "Whitney, Whitney," they run after the boy down the street. "Stop, stop, we won't make you do this. We won't make you do this." They stop him. You don't think I don't remember that? Did Mike just have a brain, you know, I mean, just almost, he had this moral moment? No, I was very concerned about his morality when he was a little boy and on up. And that moment, that fire, "I'm not there, I'm hours away, you can't, if you don't do it right, you'll be parenting them when they're 28. And that's a shame too. If you don't parent them seriously when they're 5 and 15, you'll be parenting when they're 22. My kids that are RAs in the dorms, they're dealing with hovering parents, helicopter parents. You know what that is? They never let go. We've had parents talk to my RA, say, "My kid is 22. They're a senior. Would you watch out for them?" And Joy or Grace or a different one say, "Yeah, we'll watch out for them. If they drink, they're out." Okay. We've had parents now that are going to job interviews with graduating college kids, writing all the checks. You'll be a helicopter parent. You'll be anxious. You'll be 26, and the anxiety will continue. God wants us to do it right when they're young, that we'd be a Great Commission family. Number 7, that we'd be a Great Commission family. You know, the who's who from years ago took about 10,000 families to produce a child, lands on the page of Who's Who. It's an old thing. It's not even popular anymore. And if the parents are both educated, would that make a difference? Yeah, a little bit. Took about 5,000 families to produce a child. Once on average, the demographics that would land on the pages of Who's Who. If you're both got college degrees, that helps, yeah, somewhat. But you know what? If the parents are missionaries on a mission for God, trying to do something for God, you know how many families, missionary families, it takes collectively to produce a child that does something that's so amazing athletically, scientifically, politically, culturally, to land on the page of Who's Who? They tracked this for years. The background of kids. You know how many families that are missionaries it takes to produce a child? This is where we can step in. Only 7. If you're living for something, for Christ and His kingdom, it purifies everything. Otherwise, it's just rules. And kids are going, "I'm not bored or scared with this world. In fact, Dad, you're always judging this world. Are you involved in trying to save this world? If Dad, you know, all it is rules. I do have rules, and I value rules, but are we living for the King of Kings and trying to advance His kingdom?" And the kids will smell that out, and they'll see a big, vital difference. They'll go, "Wow, Mom and Dad, they have compassion on this world. They don't play in the mud, but they have compassion on this world." That will capture their heart. And here's the 8th prayer, and it leads back to my Taco Bell story with Michael. And this one I should add onto my handout. "I have prayed, and Neva has prayed, and Neva has been more faithful in this than I have, that they would always be found out." That they would always be found out. They wouldn't be able to get away with things. Builds incredible hypocrisy. I'm just trusting that somehow that they'll always be found out. You know what I mean by being found out? And Mike was found out, and he couldn't believe it. He knew his mom prayed that way, too. And then he just even quoted it right back, the verse right back to mom. Man, if you just quit praying like this, mom. So am I going to be the eyes and ears that's going to oversee and see my kids forever and ever and ever? No. No. Who is? All right. Maybe just to continue this section of your handout, that they would have a good concept of God, some building blocks. And by the way, here they are. If you want to put them on your refrigerator door, you can pray these things. You can take one with you. That they would love and respect the Bible. That they would know the Bible's stories. Number one, they have a good concept of God. That they would love and respect the Bible. That they know the Bible's stories. If I asked you to give me 2,000 principles, 2,000 teachings, 2,000 instructions, words from God as to principle and truth, you and I'd have trouble coming up with 50. But if I asked you to give me 2,000 stories from the Bible, you and I'd come up with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of stories if we just spent some time here. And you know what we would have after we had the story? We'd have the principle. We'd have the truth. We'd have the illustration. Give them the stories of the Bible. Give them the stories of the Bible. That they would be individuals who pray. These are building blocks. I want my children to be able to pray. I've been pursuing prayer harder in the last 24 months than I have ever in my life. And I want my children to be ones who join me in prayer. That they would value obedience to God and others. That they would be courageous and loyal. Myrtle Lee, Neva Nixon Whitney's mom, Myrtle Lee, had a line, if you ever get spanked at school, you know you'll get spanked at home also. I appreciate that. We tend to bring each other to court nowadays. If somebody gets spanked at school, then parents immediately are concerned. We can't do any of these things. We better understand loyalty and courage here in our families, and we better express it in our churches. And I hope that in this church, you would covenant with each other on one mind. This is not a mind. This is a major issue. If it's a covenant, it's major. That you'll support each other as families. I've told Sunday school teachers years ago, thank you for loving my kids like I love them. Thank you for reading them the Riot Act. Thank you for telling me when they did wrong. I never debated with a teacher, a Sunday school teacher, a high school instructor, a coach. I never went in and said, I believe my kids. I don't really, you know, I just never took that posture. Don't do that. Don't do that in the church. I remember Dan Einerson. I just said, Dan, he had my last child in Sunday school. Last time, the last child was in Sunday school. I said, Dan, you were so faithful with my little girl, because he had her that spring semester along with a bunch of other girls. And he would tell me the truth. He would tell me the truth. This is how she got saved. This is how Becky got saved. You want to hear this? She's in a little class. She went on to junior high and high school, and she was with Neva and I more. But when she was still in Sunday school, she's trying to build peace between two of her best friends. And they're fighting and they're carrying on. So there's these three little girls. They're just a little tight little unit. And they're all young girls. And these two are fighting. And Becky's trying to get them to kiss and make up. And says, come on, I don't like it when you're mad at each other and all these things. And I'm trying to, and she's riding home with us in the car. And she's saying, I tried to be a peacemaker. I know that's good to be a peacemaker. I just couldn't do it. And I said, honey, you can't be a very good peacemaker unless you know the Prince of Peace. And she said, I know, and I need to get saved. And so she got saved on Buckley, driving between Airport Road or whatever on the way home on that Sunday morning. And as we get home, this is the last one, she gets saved. And she wants to call her older brothers and sisters who are off to college. And she wants to make a lot of phone calls. So we run the house, she calls up Joshua, she calls up Mandy, she calls up Joe. Guess what? What? Becky, I just got saved. And she was excited. I'm going to call Grandma. This is really fun. She wanted to call my mom, Beverly Castagnoli, who was raised by Dino Castagnoli and Agnes Castagnoli, who Dino came over on a boat from Italy. My mom has gone to Rome. She's very, very Catholic. She was very upset when I accepted Christ because she took it personally, well, this is a slap against the Catholic Church. She fought, and then her boys, Rory got saved, and Rod got saved, Rand prayed to receive Christ, and Rock was killed in a car accident. All these boys, Rick, Rock, Roy, Rand, Rob, we all get saved. And we're all talking to Mom. And Mom is just pretty put off. And she's turned a lot around in a lot of ways in the last 10 years. And she's heard so much. And God is really helping her to understand some things, sort out her Catholic faith from what it means to personally know Christ. But here's what's going on with Becky years ago. She goes, I'm going to call Grandma. I said, oh, that'd be really good. And so she dials up Grandma, and I just kind of hit the speed dial. I'm sitting there, and she picks up. She goes, hi, Grandma. Grandma, guess what happened? And Grandma says, what happened to my, she always does this. What happened to my favorite granddaughter? She goes, I just got saved. She goes, what? She goes, I'm listening into the phone call. I just got saved. I just accepted Christ. I was in the car heading home, and I was having trouble with some friends, and Dad said I could pray, and I was ready to pray, and I prayed and I accepted Christ. He's in my heart, and my mom, Bev, I mean, listen to you, honey. You've always been my princess. You've always been so sweet. What is this getting saved? And Becky said, well, I just got saved, and at which point Mom goes, could I talk to your father? And I'm going, no. You just keep talking to her. So she goes, Grandma, honestly, I just got saved. I'm so excited. He's in my heart. Kids can just amazing things. I don't know why I'm getting off on all these things here. Where did we leave this thing? Where did we leave this one? We're at 7 on the backside. Is that all the farther we've gone? Oh, 7 days of prayer. And we went through 7 building blocks. No, 7. That they would be kind and eager to serve. Kind and eager to serve. Write this down in your margin here. And I just have lots of illustrations. I'm just not going to get through them all. If you guys, you might enjoy going through some video examples. Some of the times we have stories here. But I'm just trying to give you illustration so that you contextualize the verse and carry it out in your life and decide the application. You have to work it out alone. But this is what I've written in the bottom here at this section. When children are younger, we're dealing more with their behavior. When children are younger, we're dealing more with their behavior. When they're older, we're dealing more with their attitudes. When children are younger, we're dealing more with their behavior. When older, we're dealing more with their attitudes. But this is the kicker. This is what you have to write down. But remember, comma, behavior leads to good attitude. I'll run the way of thy commandments, and thou wilt enlarge my heart. How many times have you showed up at a prayer meeting and didn't feel like praying? 1 hour into it, you're excited. How many times have you showed up to sing, didn't feel like singing? After a half hour, you're really into it. How many times have you listened, and the sermon begins, and you're kind of spacing out, and you're all over the map, and as you spend more time listening, and you're working through the scriptures, and your dialogue, and your heart follows, doesn't it? How many times have we gone out and didn't want to go witnessing, didn't want to hand out a tract or hand out a flyer for Easter? Easter's coming up. I'm sure we're going to be handing it. And well, I don't want to do it. We hand out 2 or 3. We pray on some porches, and we get kind of fired up. I will run the way of thy commandments. Thou wilt enlarge my heart. Behavior leads to attitude. When they're younger, we're dealing with behavior. When they're older, we're dealing with attitude. But never forget this. Behavior leads to attitude. Behavior leads to attitude. On being loyal, number 6 there, courageous and loyal. God wants us loyal. And I talked about best friend, how that's a dangerous word in families when that best friend is outside the family. I am all for friendships. I am all for having lots of friendships in the church and friendships in a variety of ways. But the primary relationship God gives us is our family. And there should be an incredible loyalty among our families. It's not a cliquishness. It's not a separateness. It's to be strong for others. But family should not. A best friend should never be a threat to a little brother. A best friend should never be a threat to a little sister. Well, they've got a best friend now. My kids would get off the bus and get down and play Barbies with little girls, their little siblings. And they would gentle themselves and be humble with the weaker one. That gentleness of soul towards the younger one is so important, so critical. Loyalty is built in families. My dad gave me this. Boy, when I was a senior in high school, Rick, Rock, Roy, Rand, Rod were all over the Ida County Fair. We're all showing cattle. We're showing lots of cattle. I had a quarter horse. We had a pen of 5, several pens of 5, breeding heifers. We had market lambs. We were showing. We had like 40, 50 head of livestock scattered. We just owned this this fairgrounds for a week, you know, leading up to it. And we're all over it. And we're all with belt buckles. We're all in boots and we're all just in our heyday. And I'm a senior and I'm getting ready to finish this whole thing up. And I loved it. I love animal science. I love livestock. I'm going to raise cattle for 1,000 years with the Lord. And you can, and you, we can visit each other, whatever your thing is, you'll have to find me, you know. And in the middle of all this, I over the loudspeaker, would the Whitney boys please come to the office? Would the Whitney boys please come to the office? This is Dave Hessman. He was the county extension director. I listen and I go, we're in trouble. And I was way down at the other end of the barns. By the time I got to the office, I remember the hot August afternoon. I mean, miserable, hot, sun beating down. Screen door, open that screen door, walk into this little office on, tacked on the edge of this cattle barn. And there's my brothers, Rock, Rory, Rand, and Rod. And they're all wet. I mean, they're just sopping wet and grinning and carrying on. And I mean, they're just wet. I mean, boots, everything is just wet. And they're just, and I'm looking at them and going, and finally out comes Dave Hessman. He goes, are you here? Rick, I was waiting for you. And I said, yeah, okay, what have we done, Dave? And he goes, well, I knew I need to bring you in. I need to get you all together. If I'm going to deal with some of you, I'm going to have to deal with all of you. I said, you're right. And so I sat down right by my brothers. I said, okay, what have we done? He goes, well, there's been a number of complaints from the cattle barn, especially barn number 3 on the far side of the fairgrounds. It seems like when city young men and women are walking through that barn, they're being thrown in some horse tanks. And I think it's you guys. And I looked at him, and my brother, I remember Rock turned to me and said, yeah, Rick, he should have been there. It was so much fun. You know? I said, yeah. And Rory, he goes, yeah. Rand and Rod, they go, we're just watching. We just got wet. We weren't into it, you know. I go, yeah. My dad built that into us. God, help us to really build real loyalty in our families. And that builds for loyal churches. Loyal churches can really have an impact in a town. My people that love each other, work for each other, that stand by each other. Anyway, that they be kind and eager to serve. Where are we at here? We need to keep moving. Back on the measure of a team. Number 12 has a good countenance. A joyful heart makes a cheerful face. A good countenance. What's the biggest opponent we face in this world? We have 3 of them. I mentioned it here in this little tape. I mentioned it in the booklet, The War Against Your Soul. We have 3 opponents as Christians. What are they? Flesh, devil. World, flesh, devil. Okay? I think they're all opponents. We spent some time in our spring GCLI on even spiritual warfare and how we do have opponents in the heavenlies and on this earth. And everything from the mountaintops on down controlled by the evil one. And definitely, there is a devil. And he's an opponent to our family and to our marriages and to our kids. I know that. I know that. I know that. We also have this world. And I spent some time talking about the dangers of this world and the philosophies of this world and the power systems of this world and how it comes into our family. And that is an opponent that we have to deal with. But the biggest opponent I think we're dealing with children when they're young, is the flesh. I'll just share that with you. I think it's the flesh. I recognize the evil one is lying. I think he's trying to disrupt. I know that this world, if we don't shut off all those entryways, all those valves into our family, we're just going to be like a little boy trying to hold the dam up and it's all leaking, you know. But the biggest issue that we're dealing with, I believe, as parents, with our children, especially when they're teens, is the flesh. It's the flesh. It's the flesh. Where are we here? 13. Has a good countenance. A joyful heart makes a cheerful face. We have several opponents, the world, the flesh, and the devil. I would just encourage you to circle the flesh and recognize that's one of your biggest battles. Number 13, respects others, protects siblings. A brother is born for adversity. A brother is born for adversity. You know, kids might be fighting, but someday they'll be 42 and 44. You know, I mean, it just kind of gets over with. There was a few guys, I remember at a teen conference years ago, and a few of these guys are kind of hitting at a teen conference in our Great Commission churches. They're hitting on a couple of girls in our youth group, and one of them was my daughter. And I wasn't there, and I wasn't involved, and I was involved with the conference. And I hear this story later, and the guys are sitting, and they're kind of hitting on our girls, And a big guy sits down right behind him and lays his arms over both of them from the second. He says, gentlemen. At which point, all these boys, you know, they all have their pants half down, their hats turned back, and they're all slumped down. And they see this big guy lean over, and it was my son, Mike. And he leans over and grabs all three or four of them and says, guys, you're bothering my sisters. They're my family. Stop it. Sometimes I believe in muscular Christianity, you know. I think Josh showed us the way once. Joy walks into a dorm room as an RA at CSU in the dorms years ago, and she shouldn't have walked in. She walked in with another girl, and she's breaking up a party, and there's alcohol and the whole thing. And usually you have more security, more background, and usually a guy. But she walks in, it's late at night, and she asks for IDs, and all these guys stand up, and they're kind of belligerent. And a couple of them are really big guys, different guys in this room, and they're getting kind of belligerent. One of them leaned in and said, you know, we'll hunt you down, you blank, whatever. Said something. And Joy said, give me your ID and sit down. And he did, but he threatened her. At which point, I think she called Josh, and then she called me. I got this phone call. I'm several hours away, late at night. I can't do much. I said, well, did you call? Yeah, I called Josh. And Josh immediately, I think, got 15, 20, 25. I don't know how many guys you got from The Rock. And you all visited that floor. Late that night or whatever. It seemed like the next day or something. And you visited that floor. I'm sure you remember this story. I heard it secondhand. Muscular Christianity can be helpful at times. And they visited, knocked on doors and said, you know, we don't appreciate it when you threaten people we know, especially our own family, whatever they said. Anyway, this isn't just pablum here. Number 14, honors all women, specifically his mother. All these verses have one thing in common. One thing in common. It's talking about the child's attitude towards the mom. Moms, if you lack respect from your children, whose fault is it? Men, all together, raise your hand. It's our fault. It's not the child, it's not the mom. It's our fault. It's our fault. I've told that to my kids several times. Listen, you can have all kinds of problems with me. Do not talk to your mom that way. We're going to be around long after you're gone. I like how Bill Cosby says, I brought you into the world. I can take you out. You know, he never did. You know, but, you know, if you want your sons to be great husbands, how do they treat their mom right now? Is there respect? Is there honor? This is so important. If you want your daughters to be great wives in secure situations, marriages, where they evaluate men correctly, there's so many naive girls that are 19, 20 years old, and they can't pick and choose correctly. They need to have sense. They need to have common sense. They need to have wisdom. How did they treat their mom? And how was their mom treated by their husband and by their brothers? This is so important. We can pattern so many things for the next generation in marriage. Honor all women, specifically his mother. Knows how to handle suffering. My son did not reject the discipline of the Lord. Is trustworthy and faithful. A faithful man will abound with blessings. Will abound with blessings. And they know how to handle suffering. And has a biblical understanding of grace and forgiveness. How blessed is a man who fears always. The greatest need for successful parents is to have strong hearts, strong willpower. Knows how to handle suffering. I'll review these just real quick here, but I just, you know, a story from my life, even with my dad. I was in fifth grade, and dad taught us as young boys all through high school how to handle hard times, how to handle work, how to handle suffering. He was good at that, very good at that. He started a couple of livestock fairs. He was the president of the Chamber of Commerce. He was involved in Kiwanis. He was involved in the school board. He built a high school. It still stands there under his regime. He raised the taxes and everything else. He was very involved in that community. Very, very, very involved. He built the Horn Memorial Hospital. He said, we need a hospital. He put together the board, built this hospital. It's a regional hospital. I mean, my dad was just really involved in a lot of things. And he taught us about suffering. And I remember we moved out in the country, and dad bought me this horse. And it was a big black American saddle, beautiful, big gelding. And I was living in the country with my brothers, and we were out there, and Dad was in town working on his businesses, and we built a house out in the country. And one afternoon, he has a carport and a basketball hoop, and we're shooting baskets, all of us brothers. And I just moved out there in fifth grade, and I'm like 12, 13 years old, and I'd never driven at that point. And he had a great big station wagon parked on the carport on this right beside this brand new house. It was a drive-in garage, kind of like a lot of our homes. But the car was parked kind of catty-cornered right in front of a wall, not in front of the garage. And I told my brothers, I said, well, I'll just move the car. I'll move the station wagon. It's a great big old Plymouth, huge like a tank thing. And I started up. Again, I think I'm about 12 or so, and I hadn't driven much or at all. And I fired up, vroom, vroom, vroom. And I knew kind of how Dad did, and I put it in drive. Vroom, buried it in the wall. Boom, and I just froze up. My foot was just caught on the accelerator. I mean, you know how you just freeze up? My hands up, and the tires are smoking. And Mom's up in the kitchen. She felt the whole house kind of move like this. And she comes down and walks around and reaches in the window. I had the window open at least, and she shuts it off. And at which point, I got up and I went to the barn. And I found King, brought him up out of the pasture, saddled my big horse. I went back in the kitchen. All my brothers are following me around. And Mom's following me around. I go into the kitchen. I grab a sack, and I just began to put a couple apples in, some bread, whatever. I'm just putting together my lunch. I go back out. The horse is tied by the front of the house, you know, by a gate there. I put my lunch there. I have the horse. King's all saddled up. He's a great big black American. So I'm just a little boy, and I knew how to ride this horse. And I said, Mom, Mom had learned this from Dad, too. You know, this is all ties into know how to handle suffering. I turned to Mom. I said, it was late in the afternoon. I said, I'm not going to be here when Dad gets home and see what I did to his house. I'm not going to do this. I'm out of here. What are you going to do? And all my brothers are all watching me. What are you going to do? You know, I'm going to get on King. I'm leaving. Could you say something to Dad? And I use these words. I say, you got to get him ready, prepare him. And Mom was like Micah in the Old Testament. She just answered back. She goes, your father has prepared. Prepare thyself. I said, my dad's prepared. Prepare myself. I would suggest you leave this horse tied right here, unless you sit right here on this retainer wall right by the basket. You know he's coming up the drive here in a few minutes. He'll be coming home. And you explain to him what happened. And you're right, Mom. And so I sat there, and Dad drove up the road, pulled in with his pickup, got out, sees his new house, sees the car buried in the wall, you know, moved the wall back 4 or 5 feet, sees the whole thing. It's all right there. It's not brain surgery, you know. And he goes, okay, which one? And I said, I did it. And I was going to back it. I was going to drive it, and I just did it wrong. I should have put it in reverse. He goes, no. If you had it reverse, it looks like you would be still traveling down this way, down the hill. It's up on a hill. Would have been down the hill through the creek. And he said, you know what you did wrong? Yeah. He said, well, then let's fix it. And we got a tractor, and we pulled the car out of the wall, and then we began to rebuild his house. And sometimes parents, under the guise of Christianity, we seek to shelter them from a lot of things, a lot of consequence. There are some things I do shelter them from. There's a whole lot of hard lessons in life that we need to walk with them into and let them experience. Consequences, rebuilding, starting over, saying I'm sorry, working hard, shutting things off, walking away. And that's where we come in. That's where we come in. I hope you are energized to be better parents this week than you were last week. I hope you're energized to not lose heart in well-doing. Hope you don't throw in the towel. I hope you have a heart where you just will not let go. I had my daughter. Boy, you know, listen, little Amanda, she's getting ready to finish up high school before that little valedictorian thing. Here's a week before. Dad, sometimes I just don't think you love me. You know, little girl, you know, and here go the arrows, you know, and you pull them out and you go, I set the arrows down. Honey, you know I love you. And you still can't do that, baby. It was whatever she wanted to do. It wasn't what I was going to let her do. I mean, they know how to pull all the strings. I hugged her. Have you ever hugged a child and it felt like you're hugging 5 2-by-4s? You know, the 8-foot-tall 2-by-4s, you grab them, you pick them up. That's very uncomfortable to carry around a bunch of lumber in your arms. Have you ever hugged a child, it felt like you were hugging a bunch of lumber. All the time. It happens all the time with me. Who's going to win? Who can hug them until they cry uncle? Emotionally, with my heart, who has a bigger heart, dad, mom, or the daughter? Dad and mom. Yeah, you got to believe this, guys. You got to believe this. I hug them until they melt. I had a dad who once told me, he said, Rick, I can't do that whole spank and discipline thing. I said, okay, fine. What are you going to do? He goes, well, I've got some ideas. Here was the default line in his life. He decided he would not be involved in correcting and discipline, but he felt guilty. So he pendulum swung and he gave him more liberty, more liberty, even more liberty. He just pendulum swung. I talked to him about a couple of things. I said one thing to him. I said, brother, you know, you may think I'm going to talk to you more about discipline. I'm going to talk to you about affection. This is one brother I talked to him about. I said, I don't know if you're connecting with this girl. She's 16 years old. How big is your heart, brother? And he goes, it's pretty big. I said, can you hug her? He said, oh, I don't know if I could hug her. I said, well, if you don't hug her, you're going to still feel guilty. You're going to give her more permission. And he did. And I said, sit her down on your sofa right between you and mom and sit with her for hours. Oh, that'd be very uncomfortable. I said, well, what will happen after it's uncomfortable? Well, maybe we'll get somewhere. I said, maybe we will. I had a dad who said to me, Rick, if I do what you say, my boy will take a swing at me. And he's old enough to do it. I mean, he was in his teens, late teens. He said, if I do what you say, I said, what will you do when he takes a swing at you? He goes, well, I said, how about step into the swing? How about step in and grab him? He called me late that night. This happened several years ago. It was just the way you said, Rick. I said, I'm done with this. We have to change some things. And God has caught your dad, and things are going to have to change for both of us. Dad stood up. The boy stood up. I said, first question I asked him, I said, what will he say first? He said, well, he'll drop F this and F that, and he'll do this and that and everything else. I said, okay, and then what? Then he'll take a swing, and then what? I don't know. I said, well, listen, he's probably going to expletive deleted, and when he takes a swing, you grab him real tight, and you hug him until he says uncle. And they did, and he took a swing, and he stepped in, and he caught, and they fell to the floor, and the boy started crying. First time in like 4 years, the boy started crying. He was like 17 years old. Who's got a bigger heart in this room? The people down the hall, the teenagers down at home, or you and I? Boy, you and I have got to answer this, guys. Appreciate your heart, brother. I hope everyone answers this way. Who's got the bigger heart in this room? The big people or the little people? It better be the big people. It better be the big people. Do not lose heart in well-doing. Don't get frustrated. Are you going to run into things that are not on the handouts and not illustrated and they won't be cute and they won't be funny? Well, yes, you are. And then what? It can get really ugly. And then what? Who's going to give up? I'm going to encourage you not to give up. Not to give up. You and I are raising arrows that will do great things for God if we lock and load and are tenacious. Here's my story. It's at the end of that book. I was going to read it. I lost the copy of it. But this story just came down like this in Florida. And I'm going to share it again. Because right before I went to press with that book, a brother from Gainesville sent me this story. And it involved a boy. And in Florida, backyards, almost every town has a backyard opening up onto a body of water. Ponds, there's so many lakes. Minnesota's land, 10,000 lakes. Florida has 20,000. I mean, there's just so much water in Florida. I lived there for many years. And in all these ponds from Gainesville south are nothing but lots and lots of largemouth bass and alligators. And I fished on those ponds with Walt Nemechek, and we brought lures back and jumped them over water lilies and brought them back and catch largemouth. And watch the battleships circle and just come right in for it. And you try to bring that largemouth in quicker than the alligator. It's just kind of fun fishing, you know. And most of the alligators are just small. They're like 4 or 5 feet. The big ones ended up bothered with fishing and everything. I don't know what they're waiting for. Well, here's what happened. Here's the story. A boy jumps off the dock in the backyard into the water. He's swimming. And his mom is in the kitchen and sees it. And all this is on the nightly news, and she sees off in the distance an alligator turned towards the boy. The boy's a young boy, 9, 10 years old. She screams out the window, runs out the back door. Get up on this, you know, get out of the water, Johnny, whatever. And he's getting out of the water, and the alligator isn't a big one. If it was a big one, we wouldn't have an empty, happy story. Because the alligator latches on to the boy's leg at the very moment that mom grabs the boy's arms. And a tug of war ensues. And it's brief and violent, and she won't let go. And eventually the alligator lets go. It's not a big alligator. The boy is in the hospital. The TV cameras are there. You have had a very lucky encounter. Can you show our audience here today your scars on your legs from where the alligator bit? And the camera goes, and the boy lifts up his hospital gown. He's got, you know, 20, 30 stitches here, maybe 10 over here. Dogs and alligators in Florida, they don't mix, especially at night. alligators are just everywhere. We'd jump over them when we walked around campus. You know, they'd be laying on the sidewalk in the summer. In the wintertime when it's cold, they'd be laying on that sidewalk hoping to get a little heat. They're just everywhere. They ask the boy, show the scars, and he shows the scars, and they says, here, I want to show you the scars my mom left on my arms because she wouldn't let go, and her nails had dug right in. That's a powerful story. Mom wouldn't, I want to show you the scars my mom left on my arms. She wouldn't let go. Are you willing to leave scars on your child's heart, scars on their arms, and never let go? This is so important. This is so important. There is all kinds of evil in this world. I want to leave scars on my children. And I did. I did. And they're gone. Lord, help us here. Help us, Lord. We only have one shot with these kids. They're going to be 18, 20 in just a blink of an eye. Lord, as parents, we are asking for grace and help and strength and resolve and the character we need to have and show that kind of grace and heart and strength and resolve. Lord, help us. In Jesus' name, amen. 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 If you guys have questions, I'd be happy to sit. I have time before we go to the airport, so you're welcome.